episode number 33 of the Endless Sea Podcast. That's right, 33, the same number of working brain cells that's owned by referee Joey Crawford. I'm Andrew, returning to you this week on our regularly scheduled program, our weekly podcast. I'm joined by Leftos.
Hello.
And Ben. Okay.
Hello, I'm the late one this week, so yeah.
Yeah. Nevertheless, we want to thank everyone, I guess, before we get going about with this week's podcast, for tuning in to all of last week's special episodes, our mini episodes, which perhaps weren't so mini, except maybe the last one, or the one that only went an hour and a half. But yeah, everyone.
I think that was the second to last. Was part three. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's right. The last one was 140, but. Still, a short episode by our standards, but everyone, pretty much everyone was tuning in every day. The numbers for each individual podcast were the same as we get every week. So you tune in every day and listen to our thoughts, and a few of you had a couple of comments here and there, so we thank you for that. And if you just joined the podcast last week for the first time, we hope you liked what you heard and stick around, because we do have some fun, but we may have some griping on this week's podcast. If you're a fan of referee Joey Crawford, you may not like it, but if you are a fan of referee Joey Crawford, you really need to look in the mirror. But before we get...
And chances are you are Joey Crawford.
You may be related to Joey Crawford, yes. But before we get to the NBA Finals, we do have a couple of other... news and notes items, stumbling over my words here. We've got a few other things to talk about before we get there, haven't we? Put it that way. We had a fair bit of news coming in last week about the video games, the basketball games, that is. Not so much this week, although Douglas Beanie over at StickSkills.com has posted his hands-on impressions of NBA Live 14 and a video interview with gameplay designer Scott O'Gallagher. And there's been a couple of other people, other sites post hands-on impressions guys that have noted that there's no official release date, and one even went so far to say that there's no hope for NBA Live 14, considering and suggesting that it's not going to come out. And I mean, my understanding was it's being confirmed as a launch title, so the fact there's no date probably just means that there's the actual date of the new consoles is yet to be confirmed. So I think there's a couple of sites reading a little bit too much into that. But once again, it has gone quiet. I'm guessing that maybe around about the draft, which is what, next week, the week after, thereabouts, we'll get maybe a couple of the tidbits from both companies, and then things will tip off as we get into the summer, if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, or the winter, if you are like me and currently freezing one's butt off in the Southern Hemisphere. But... moving on to a couple of other news and notes, something we haven't talked about is EA Sports is getting rid of the online pass. And this was announced a couple of weeks back, and with all the other things we go on and on about here on the NLSC podcast, we never really got around to it. But the online pass, where if you bought a copy of an EA Sports title new, you'd be able to... refer to a little slip that came with the game and punch in an online passcode to use all the online facilities. And if you bought the game used, you have to buy it as DLC. But apparently EA Sports have learned from the unpopularity of that move and have discarded that completely, to the point where they're even distancing themselves from Microsoft and saying, no, we had nothing to do with Microsoft's DRM. So everybody's throwing Microsoft under the bus and over the past week or so, but certainly seems like a good move, wouldn't you say, Ben?
Yes, I know it was sort of met with a lot of controversy from gamers and that you know, it was just, yeah, it was sad to see. Or just, man, I haven't structured my thoughts on this properly, have I? I'm already going to need to do a retake now. you know, I suppose, you know, it does come with that whole reputation of EA sort of, the whole money grabbing side of things, like Activision, you know, they have that reputation. So, it's good to see it removed. Hopefully, there's no sort of secondhand, or not so much a secondhand, but sort of
something to replace it for the
people. Yeah, especially with the whole DRM issue, or even the open sort of third party policy that is capable with the PS4 and all that stuff. So if they do bring it back, they're just going to shoot themselves in the foot, like what Microsoft have done. So let's hope it's that learning curve that everyone has sort of learnt from the whole issues with Diablo and SimCity and every other failed attempt at it. So,
And they seem pretty, they seem pretty intent on this. They say it's dead and it's staying dead.
I would love to trust EA. I really would. But my prediction is, and I hope I'm proven right, just like Sony proved me right. I hope I'm proven wrong. Okay, nobody has words today. Nobody. No, we've all forgotten how to use English today. So it's going to be...
Well, look how many
podcasts... Hello to episode 14, part 2, I guess.
We did four episodes last week. You appeared on the SimNation Radio, and I believe even had a stint as the de facto lead. at one point. So you've had about 10-15 hours of podcasting in the last.
Yeah, nine hours of recording. Add to that all the editing I had to do for our podcast. Yeah, it was a fun week.
We wouldn't change a thing.
to get back on topic. I hope EA proves me wrong, just like Sony proved me wrong when I said that I was expecting them to announce some kind of DRM just to match what Microsoft did. I don't know if EA has actually learned from its from the bad reputation it's gained with its anti-used game policy with the online pass and the whole SimCity debacle, and says that if you sell a game, if you sell the game to a friend, since you're not going to be using it anymore, they can go online without paying anything additional. I don't know. It really seems that Microsoft did what they did single-handedly without, having any publisher agreements, without having something behind the scenes. But I'm not willing to believe that just yet. I think that statements coming out of publishers saying, no, we didn't ask Microsoft to do anything like that, seems to me like maybe, they're coming after, E3. Nobody was jumping out of their seat saying, no, we had nothing to do with what Microsoft has announced before the E3 reactions.
Yeah. A good idea to distance yourself now.
Yeah. I'm thinking that statements like this seem like damage control, but if E3 and the public reaction actually not manages to, get the executives and the producers to say that we're staying away from online DRM, but also to actually stay away from it, other than just saying that and introducing something else with some cool buzzwords to it, about all the additional features you'll be getting for paying $20. If that actually happens, if we've managed just by reaction to, just push off a side of DRM and make sure that used game sales stay the way they are, at least on the PlayStation, is a huge win for the consumer. But we'll see. It's for me right now, it seems too good to be true. And it's not like it's not like I'm trying to be prejudiced against any company, but EA has done some very much so criticized things in the past.
Yeah,
whether they've learned from their reputation is tarnished. I think it's ridiculous they've been voted worst company, not just video game company, but worst company in America twice in a row. I think that's a huge overreaction
what's your priorities in life? That the company that's screwing you over worst are the one who's making a video game you're not quite happy with. I mean,
I think video gamers take stuff like that very personally and are very much more vocal around the internet and willing to vote on polls and stuff like that. So that's why I see EA coming off as more of a bad company than Bank of America, which, you know, I in no case do I believe. But, you know, it remains to be seen whether, you know, actually EA has learned from its mistakes and is giving up on some of its DRM to please the consumers after seeing the reaction, or whether, you know, some new DRM is just, you know, in the works, or, you know, something they didn't, you know, they couldn't pass off the online pass in the next generation. They're thinking of a new way to apply DRM.
Yeah, well, I mean, they did. This was a few weeks back that they originally said they were doing it away. So it was before Microsoft's series of blunders. But yeah, like I say, you always, cynical as it may be, you can't help but wonder, well, is there going to be a replacement? Yeah. The other thing that that EA comments, interesting comments they made recently in response to the Wii U, what would they do to return to the platform? And basically it was, well, Nintendo has to sell more boxes. And, well, I guess that's probably the way a lot of developers are feeling at the moment. And we've spoken about the Wii U before, especially last week, as we noted that everything at E3 was coming in 2014 for the Wii U. Once again, we're left to wonder where does it go for that console from here, because it appears to be, again, in the middle of a generation, behind, it's going to be behind the One and the PS4, and whether it has the same kind of innovation as the Wii brought, because once again, it's been done. The Wii controller is basically they're just repeating themselves there, and without even first party games coming out, you know, what's and big developers like EA not touching it until they sell more consoles. But of course, catch 22 is that who's going to buy the console if the games aren't coming for it? So yeah, what is the Wii U, after winning the last generation of Nintendo, setting themselves up for a loss here?
Yeah, I mean, we've been discussing that, and it really makes me, you know, it really makes me sad to see the Wii U fail so badly. I mean, there's no, it's the catch-22 that we've been discussing, that you need developers to make games for your system, but then you need to make sales in order to get developers interested. And I feel it's the same way, you know, for the Wii U as it is with Windows Phone. There's just so much. So much of the crowd is on other platforms that, you know, maybe developers delve a little, but then see that there's not a lot to be gained out of, you know, investing in a Wii U version. And considering, you know, the difference in architecture, developers that are moving strictly to next gen, you know, it would seem that it would appear to be a lot easier to make a next gen and even a PC version in you know, at the same time, rather than make a Wii U version.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, Nintendo will really, you know, have to impress with its first-party developers at some point. And it's disappointing that it has no upcoming games that are, you know, really big or blockbuster in 2013. I mean, by the time Wii U has any new, and even if they're impressive games, most of the people will have already invested in a next generation console.
Exactly.
The only way Nintendo would be able to at least get some of its crowd back would be to release some great games before the next generation, to entice people to either buy a Wii U earlier, or, you know, invest in some games and then stick with the Wii U and don't, you know, not move to the next generation. But right now, Nintendo's plan seems to be falling apart, and I don't know, you know, how much future the Wii U has, actually.
Yeah, with so many third-party developers just...
yeah, saying just that we aren't developing games right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's essentially a lame duck year for the Wii U at the moment.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, when you're not even bringing out a new Mario game, or are they bringing out a Mario Kart or a Super Smash Brothers or something this year?
Yeah, not until next year.
Oh, until next year. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So it's all next year. So yeah, so then again, you know. But, well, I mean, Nintendo's done all right for themselves, I guess, over the last generation, and I guess they'll still move some Wii units or even Wii games, people picking them up cheap. So, yeah.
Do you think that you know the this generation's problems with the Wii U will persuade maybe Nintendo to finally get some of its first-party exclusive games to other consoles, or do you think they'll stick to their egoistic approach? All our games will be just on our console, you know. Which is,
yeah.
I'm saying egoistic approach, but it's the same with first-party developers for Sony and Microsoft.
Okay.
However, you know, you'd have to wonder the developers. You know, in order for the developers to make money, besides the money that, you know, Nintendo invests in them, they need to be selling. And as long as the Wii U isn't selling and their games aren't selling, you know, first-party developers may be looking to move on. So it's curious to see, you know, how long, you know, possibly they have contracts to stay under Nintendo's wing for some time, but how long can you stay under a company's wing that has you as a video game, as a first-party developer on a platform that doesn't sell?
I mean, I'd love to see it. I'd, as I mentioned in one of the podcasts last week, I haven't played a Zelda game since Majora's Mask, so I wouldn't mind giving those a look, or some of the Mario games, or Mario Kart especially, always fun to play multiplayer, a game like that. I'd love to see it, but yeah, I think Nintendo's going to hold on pretty tightly to those. Probably, well, I mean, it is their biggest draw card for a start, and second, you look at some of the Mario and Zelda CDI games, for example, things don't always go well when they hand off their property to other people, so maybe they're cautious about that, and even licensing their IP for movies and things. I mean, the famous Super Mario Brothers movie from the early 90s, which
that was pretty bad. But I think
so bad it's good. So that's the best you can say about it.
I can tell you this: it was better than that Double Dragon movie.
That it was, yes.
oh
God, yeah,
and probably still better than Street Fighter.
Yeah, although Street Fighter's delightfully corny, and that's probably the best thing you could say about some of those video games.
Would you say the graphics are cartoony?
the script is cartoony. I don't have anything else.
The only line I remember from the Street Fighter movie was "You got paid" when Zangief said that to I can't even remember who it was that he said it to, but it was like all that fake Bison, all the Bison money.
Oh, and Bison, yeah. Actually, for a while there, Doug Walker, the Nostalgia Critic, had a running gag in his episodes. Whenever anyone would talk about taking over the world, it would cut to M. Bison turning around and doing the dramatic, "Of course!" And he retired that gag after a while. But yes, the memorable moments are very hammy and cheesy. So it will be interesting to see what happens with the Wii U. But since we have broached the topic of next-gen consoles, Leftos, you found an interesting post from a Microsoft engineer, which you posted in the forum, talking about the direction that Microsoft is looking to take and kind of defending the whole situation.
Yeah. You would imagine a Microsoft engineer would be defending the design choices.
But very sort of assertively defending it.
Yeah. Assertively is one way to put it. I use the title "candid post" by Xbox One engineer.
It was a lot of things, that post.
Yeah. There were a lot of things. So what the Xbox One engineer opens with is that Microsoft sucks at telling the story. And I've been thinking about that because there are some good things that have come out of everything about the Xbox One. For example, you know, once you set your family cycle of up to 10 friends, and you know, once someone buys a game, two of those 10 people can play the single player portion at the same time. So if I'm in a family circle with my friends, you know, and we're single player mostly, you know, we favor single player mostly, the price of the game has just halved, as long as, you know, not more, because essentially for the whole 10 people to be playing the same game on single player at the same time, you only need 5 copies. So if games are $60, each person is paying $30 for the single player portion, but, you know, they just can't play multiplayer at the same time. And, you know, it's stuff like that needs to come out of some obscure interview and then be propagated through Reddit or NeoGAF or in the, you know, major technology websites until it comes out. I think that Microsoft pretty much needs to get a video out to explaining why they think this whole strategy will work. Why have they gone all digital? What are the advantages of being on an all digital platform other than being able to switch between TV and Skype and Internet Explorer and my games very fast? Yeah. You know, why is the Xbox One thousands of dollars worth in value, as Don Matrick said, you know, to justify the $500 price? But the interesting tidbit is, out of the Xbox One engineers post, is if you want games cheaper than $59.99, you have to limit used games somehow. Steam's model requires a limited used game model. And it is true that Steam has, you know, a lot of sales because you can't actually resell games on Steam. You can only gift games, you know, new games. And there are some packs. For example, developers can say, you know, buy one, get one for free and gift it to a friend of yours on Steam and stuff like that. But you can transfer a game after you're done playing with it. And but, you know, there's still no indication that games will be cheaper than $59.99. You know, because games, of course, on the PC tend to be are always cheaper than the consoles, but some games you see them, you know, with a starting price that's lower than the $50 that are usually games on the PC rather than the $60 on the consoles. So it's going to be interesting. Does the Xbox One, you know, DRM give incentive to developers, you know, since they'll be going all digital if they want to, and apparently Microsoft will be making it easy for them as long as they're not indies and trying to self-publish. Oh god, this is just terrible. I'm trying to justify and I'm having such a hard time doing so. but you know, Microsoft needs publishers to come out and say that, you know, since there's no used games on the Xbox One, we'll be able to offer you games even just down the line, you know, just a year after, you know, a year after the game comes out, or something like 6 months or 4 months or anything. We'll be able to, you know, give you much better prices than you'll get buying a game retail for PlayStation. But then, you know, if new games aren't actually cheaper than the $60 and every game comes out $60, you have to say that, you know, the same price drops can be done by retailers down the road. So, for example, you know, if games don't come out less than $60 new on the Xbox One, you know, developers can just say, you know, PS4 retailers can just say that, okay, it's been 4 months since the game came out, we'll drop the price to $40, you know?
Yeah.
So this whole thing makes sense if the incentive that there is no used games on our platform actually gets publishers to produce games that are going to be cheaper than $60 day one. If that doesn't happen, I see no point for what Microsoft is saying. And there are a few good things, such as, you know, being able to sign on to your account from anywhere and being able to play your games, but then you have such heavy limitations to that. If you have to check in every 24 hours on your own console, you have to check in every hour on your you have to check in every hour on if you sign in from another person's console. So even if they're going for the Steam model, Steam doesn't require people to, you know, sign in every 24 hours. Yeah. So even for the good things they're trying to do, you know, they are shooting themselves in the foot and in the head, you know, time and time again. And they're saying, you know, the developer's saying, you know, people want to stop using discs. Well, the thing is, we've said it again and again last week, PlayStation offers both retail and digital. You don't have to use any discs if you don't want to.
Yep.
Games will still be available digital day one from the PlayStation Network. And you know, there's been videos showing off how you can download maybe the single player portion or the multiplayer portion first and have the other portion of the game download later on. And there's been discussions about, you know, being able to just download the first level and having the other levels download in the background to get you into the game as soon as possible. So for everything that, you know, for everything that Microsoft has done and seems to be, you know, forward thinking and a lot of, you know, and good for the consumer down the road, you know, you could say pretty much the same things about Sony and what they're doing with PlayStation 4. And it's going to, I think it's going to be down to this simple thing. Are games going to be cheaper day one on the Xbox One? If yes, then you have a reason to entice people to your home DRM scheme. If they are living in one of the 21 countries that you support at launch.
Yeah, that too. And it's,
that too. With a minor thing. I mean, you know, who cares that the Xbox One launching in Greece?
On top of everything else, you know, like as we said last week, you know, the DRM, the approach and everything. Oh, and by the way, you know, if you happen to live in these countries, you know, too bad. And we have a console for you. And even that post, I mean, as many good points as it may have made and things that it explained probably a lot better than the PR guys did, there was still something, some arrogance and playing the victim in there, and I'm repeating what I posted in that thread, that it just didn't appeal to me as a consumer. It's still, and I guess he's an engineer, he's not a PR person, but he explained some things better than the PR guys have done, and yet at the same time adopted that same aggressive, overly assertive, arrogant way of thinking and of expressing the why Microsoft is doing this and how everyone who's saying otherwise or has any kind of concerns is wrong and stupid and not seeing the big picture. I think people are seeing a lot of the big picture. And even if it comes down to, why do I need to check in every 24 hours? You know, other things get in the way, life gets busy, I can't turn the console on every day. What if I go?
If you're working on a nuclear submarine for,
but not even. I mean, they went for the most extreme example, of course, and that was dumb in itself. But you know, what if I do just get caught up during the week and I do most of my gaming at the weekend, or what if I go away or. Well, whatever.
Apparently, you know, since the Xbox One will not be, I don't know if it will be completely off. Maybe it can, you know, just keep its Ethernet and a small part of its firmware on at all times, and you know, or just turn on for a few seconds to do the online checking, and you know, turn off again.
Like in a safe mode situation or a sort of a standby mode where
I mean I see these
Then why are they coming out and sort of explaining you don't have to physically turn the console on every day.
Yeah,
I mean that's the kind of thing that you should offer confirmation of first and foremost, because you've seen that people are concerned about this, like, oh, I really have to babysit my console.
It's the first thing the Xbox One engineer said. The thing is, we suck at telling the story.
Yeah.
You know, if there are good things or things that could make up for the bad things, at least, you know, Microsoft isn't saying it.
Yeah.
And this thing about, you know, games having lower prices than the $60, it's only coming out of, you know, obscure interviews and things like this. You know, the Xbox One engineer statements. Yeah. It's not coming out of Microsoft. It's not coming out of Major Nelson, at least. You know, there's no major incentive for the consumer to go with the Xbox One other than, you know, a few exclusives. I really don't see, you know, Microsoft, if there are positive things, they need to tell the story better. They need to come out with a video showing off why people will be, you know, why the platform they've chosen and the way they're doing things is supposed to be better for us. But the fact that no publishers are coming out saying that, you know, our prices on the Xbox One are going to be lower, which makes sense from a publisher standpoint because they're thinking, you know, why the hell should we care that Microsoft, you know, has demolished themselves? Why should we put out a lower price? We could be making an even bigger profit margin, you know, out of thinking that nobody will be able to buy games used and will be still be able to get $60 out of every single user.
They don't
seem to care, you know, where Microsoft goes with this. They're keeping to the $60 price tag, which, you know, some people are trying to spin off as better than the $70 price tag, which was just a rumor. So I don't see how it is better. But
it's better than the worst-case scenario, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, of course, of course. Of course, staying alive another day is better than being stabbed to death, but, you know, do you...
Yeah.
I don't feel the need to, you know, say...
It's hyperbole, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, thank God another day has gone by and I didn't get stabbed to death.
Yeah.
It's not the thing that worries me every single day.
I must admit, I do think that every time, but...
Or attacked by cordyceps infected.
Drop bears.
I had a good old drop bears.
Here's the other thing that it goes back to what we've been saying, and what indeed the engineer themselves said was that they suck at telling the story and communication being the key word here. But something else they probably should have done at E3 was show the games on a console and not PCs running NVIDIA.
Yeah, NVIDIA graphics cards of all things. I mean, if those PCs were running Intel i7s and NVIDIA GTXs, this is the funniest thing to come out of E3. You know, absolutely, hands down the funniest thing. Even better than the Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare trailer to open the EA press conference on day zero. I mean,
oh, come on now.
AMD APUs have dominated the next-gen consoles. AMD has managed to get its advanced processing units that combine a CPU and GPU in a unified architecture on both the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4, which is good news for developers because, you know, it's easier for them to develop for both consoles. But... a photo came out of E3 with a cabinet that got opened when a game crashed to a Windows 7 desktop, an Xbox One game crashed into a Windows 7 desktop, and someone comes up, part of the support personnel, I guess, you know, comes up, opens the cabinet, and someone manages to grab a photo of a PC tower, and apparently, you know, I don't know how they verified this, you know, that the PCs were running NVIDIA graphics cards, but, you know, that's the news that is coming out, and it hasn't been disputed by Microsoft that, you know, the all the E3 demos for Xbox One were running on PCs with NVIDIA GTX CPUs.
And not even Windows 8. Windows
7.
Yeah,
and not even Windows 8. Yeah, and not even Windows 8.
It's actually funny too, like when Jeff Neely and all that went into the Microsoft studios after, I think, the initial Xbox One reveal, you know, there's this whole thing where they were actually at the studios in a few weeks in advance and all that stuff before the announcement to do some prep work and all that. And, all the developers and all that stuff were using Windows 7, not Windows 8. On their computers in the background, like for their sort of tech support sort of factor of it. And I was like, that seems a little bit odd considering that, you know, Windows 8
you'd think that, yeah, you'd think that with an interview coming up, they'd at least use some kind of Windows 8 video to be playing, you know, at various screens to imitate that at least they're using Windows 8.
Yep.
But then again, we've seen Microsoft press conferences where, you know, the person making the presentation had a MacBook Pro on the stand, so
yeah. You know.
And you'd have to wonder, wasn't Microsoft expecting that games could crash and they would crash to a Windows 7 desktop and it would be embarrassing? Nobody thought of that?
Microsoft doesn't seem to have thought of anything, I think, is the bottom line to take away from E3. Or certainly have not anticipated the worst-case scenario, shall we say.
That yeah. They went in with the should-be-sweet-as-bro approach.
I mean, that's a very chill attitude to have. I mean, you know, you've got to admire that, I suppose, but yeah, no, the fail-safes are just, yeah. I mean, what yeah. We said it all last week, it just was not a fantastic showing for them with, and whether that was their fault of not explaining this or that properly, or the lack of foresight about certain features and approaches. Well, they've got some catching up to do, it seems.
Yeah.
Although, having said that, I mean, as I've said before, I'm certainly leaning towards PlayStation 4 now, but PlayStation 3 has just received another firmware update that's caused a lot of consoles to brick. So, yep. I mean, that's you know.
I'm seeing reports that it only affects consoles with 1 terabyte hard drives. Other reports are saying that it affects other third.
So,
is it third party as well? I heard that there's third party drives.
Yeah, third party. I think what I'm reading is that only third party people with third party hard drives are affected. I didn't know the 500 gigabyte and up part, by you know, but the reports are kind of confusing because people are complaining from all fronts about their consoles becoming bricked, and it's always a risk, I guess. I mean, I want to jump ship to Sony. I want to trust them. But there were so many things wrong with PlayStation 3's life cycle that it seems like the lesser of two bads right now. You know?
That Atari 2600 is looking fantastic.
Yeah.
Still functioning 30 years later. But
actually,
my PC is looking fantastic.
Yes, yeah. We have a platform for you.
A TV show here which reviews a lot of games was actually on last night, and they sort of did this whole mock-up. They essentially took the piss out of the whole Xbox One sort of scenario, and they called it, even though they sort of called it Mahogany Station, and it's just basically a wooden box bound to set on fire, couldn't really do too much, had like... 56k dial-up connection and all that has to verify upon verifying, and they actually had people like staff members at E3, and they were talking to some of the developers like Activision and a couple of others, and they were talking about, oh yeah, we'll definitely try and code something for get something working at such a frame rate on the Mahogany Station.
I remember reading, speaking of consoles from back in the day, I actually got an Intellivision a compilation called Intellivision Lives that has all the games emulated for PC and also the PS2 version as well, produced by the original developers, and they've got a bunch of inside stories, and you, as a programmer, you like this left those when a few years after they released the games, they had to create some more, and they had to go and grab the source code, and when the new people working on it went through the source code, they found all the variables were the most vile profanities and terminologies known to man, used as all the variables and keywords in the programming. So,
I always liked to pull stunts like that, where I would make a perfect piece of code a very good piece of code for a university assignment, and then I would either wreak havoc in the comments by, you know, either profanities or, you know, just taking a piece out of the whole project, or just changing the names of a few variables to something weird. For example, we had to do a server client architecture project, and the way for the whenever the client sent a message to the server to shut down, in order to shut down the server client side with the secret code, the procedure that would shut down the server was actually called kill myself. And, you know, the server would be putting out all those messages about, dying and screaming, and, you know, the server screen would just fill up with screaming and, you know, and, no, I'm dying, and save me, and stuff like that, and then it would shut down completely. So I think it would be really fun to watch, you know, whoever was creating my project to see the reaction to all the little things I put in there. But, you know, since I was confident, because if your code is doing what it's supposed to do, a little profanity doesn't hurt, I guess. Yeah. Unless you're producing stuff for the public. And I remember a few weeks ago I sent an article to Ben. It was a report on Ars Technica that said that the Halo 2 version for the port to the PC had to be delayed because when the game crashed, something that was left over from the debug builds, instead of the game crashing to the desktop with no message whatsoever that most games do for whatever reason, there was something left over from the debug builds, a little joke played on one of the developers where there was a photo of him with his pants down, his, you know, butt naked. Showing off, flaunting his ass to the camera, and that was what showed up each time the game crashed. And apparently some users that were part of the demo, I don't know if it was a closed demo or an open demo, actually came across that. And the release date had to be pushed back so that the development team made sure that that window would never show up in the end user's...
it's hot coffee all
in
over.
The end user's machines. Yeah, it's,
I remember reading on Snopes, actually, there was... somebody creating a batch email for a bank customers, and that was supposed to be targeting some of the wealthier customers about some kind of investment that rich people do with banks. I have no idea, not being a rich person myself. But the
would it be to help the Prince of Nigeria transfer some money?
it was slightly above board, more above board than that, I believe. But it was in the testing. The person who clearly didn't think much of people with money just put in a test, a little template, dear rich bastard, and then went on to like really rip into the how the wealthy look down on the middle class and all such. And from then on, and then of course, you know, in the testing, they actually got sent out to all these wealthy customers, and then had to get groveling apologies that they wouldn't take all their funds elsewhere, but with the notice that in the future we will simply type testing 123 in all of our test messages. But yeah, dear rich bastard, it's yeah.
Now that I got your attention.
Yeah, that's right. Oh well, the joys of programming left us as you know. Yeah. And in fact, you've done a little bit of programming recently with the video games that we mentioned once
before,
or twice.
Before I get into that, you know, for the people that had watched the live development, not either the live development stream or, you know, the developer diary, as we named it on YouTube afterwards, of me and John working on Pro Wrestling X. Initially, whenever the tool would export the assets of the game correctly, it would put out a message saying, assets exported successfully or something along the lines of that, and would then, and your titties are nice. So we were contemplating on whether, you know, on whether we should remove that before releasing the tool to the public, given that it was in the developer diary already, but we thought, you know, we shouldn't offend anyone. Although it was a funny tidbit, and it was so enjoyable because you see the video and we laugh each time it shows up. It never gets old. You know, a program telling you that your titties are nice. But we did remove all instances of that before releasing it to the public after we were done, unfortunately.
Man boobs need love too.
Yeah, absolutely. Me and programming, boy, that's a story. I have been doing a fair bit lately. You could say that. Would you like to introduce so I can, you know, tout my own horn a bit later on?
I'll go with.
Oh, you mean you won't be doing that after the podcast?
What do you do in your own time? Well, we've had a bit of a... Yeah, there's no recovering from this episode 14 part 2. But we...
Shut up!
Yeah.
Okay, let's get on.
Yeah, 3, 2, and 1. And anyway, we've had a bit of an exciting breakthrough in the community this week. Nessa or Nisa 24, I'm not sure how his mother pronounces that, or indeed that's the name that his mother gave him. But in any case, he's been doing some excellent work. And
Nisa 24.
Sorry? Nisa 24.
Imagine his mother calling him Nisa 24 every time, with a 24. I mean,
Does it mean he has 23 other siblings before him with the same name?
Well, my mother calls me by my screen name, but when it's just my given name, it kind of defeats the purpose. Yeah. But
it reminds me of George trying to persuade those other people to call their kid Soda or Seven.
Yeah.
On Seinfeld. Yeah.
But yeah, we've had a breakthrough, and Nisa 24 has found out, decoded the audio formats, the audio files for NBA 2K13 PC, and lent his assistance to Ulefthos in developing a little tool to actually import custom soundtracks. So if you hate Jay-Z, or even if you just don't really care for him, you can actually get new songs into the game, and I'll hand it over to you to talk about all the wonderful features of the tool in question.
Yeah. Nisa 24 was... I wouldn't say it's so much his findings as it's his perseverance and his dedication to getting this done.
Yeah.
Because he started with no information whatsoever, and even though, you know, most of us had no idea, even those of us, including me, who had approached this at some point or other, had no idea on how to help him, and our information wasn't really leading him the right way. He actually went on, contacted a lot of people on various forums, and actually managed to, you know, to get the format out, which, you know, after he said what the format was, I mean, it was so obvious that I was pissed off at myself for not thinking that, you know, this is most probably an Xbox 360 port. It should be using, you know, whatever it is using DirectX on the PC. So what's used by DirectX to play audio on the PC? And it was absolutely that. It was the format. It was the libraries, the X audio libraries that DirectX uses on the PC in order to play sounds. And there's only one audio format that X-Audio 2 regularly uses, or mostly uses, that we hadn't tried. It wasn't MP3, it wasn't any kind of wave, it was Microsoft's own proprietary XWMA, which Nisa 24 figured out, and he also figured out, you know, where you need to input those converted files in the bin files to, you know, to actually replace what they have already. He figured out the header, so all I did was create the tool that can pretty much open up any audio, any NBA 2K audio bin file. I think it was ever since, you know, NBA 2K changed formats. I think it was either 2K10 or 2K11 that... Was it 2K9? Was 2K9 or 2K10 the last game that we managed to put our own music in?
I've heard someone say 2K9. That could be a mistake.
Yeah. But, you know, ever since the format changed, I think they must be using the same format because DirectX 9 has been around for quite a few years. So I'm thinking that we can go back and edit sounds as far as NBA 2K11 or even NBA 2K10. The tool can open any kind of audio bin file, so not just, you know, the soundtrack. You can open the commentary files and replace their audio segments if you want. And, you know, if someone had enough time on their hands, they could be making, you know, custom commentary, which is, you know, amazing when you think of it, to be able to build stuff like that. So it's going to be interesting to see what we do with this, and we're already getting a few custom soundtracks in the forums, which is cool. I mean, Razer put out a custom soundtrack with songs from NBA Live 01 to 04, which was I downloaded it immediately as soon as I saw that thread, got it into the game, and the feeling of nostalgia was so great. I got shivers by hearing some of those old games. I remember in the days I was 11 years old playing, you know, NBA Live 01 and 02. That's amazing stuff, and it's cool that we're able to do things like that in the gray areas of modding. It was really nice. The moment I saw that Nessa had done his research, and the moment he said that I don't have time, I'll try to think of something to code something, I said I would give up on all NBA 2K specific tools, but I just had to do that. I just had to pick up his research and get the tool out. And
you're not on the payroll just yet, so.
Yeah, I'm not on the payroll just yet, and even if I was, you know, don't tell anyone, but I might have secretly made the tool and just asked Zhao to put it out under his name or something. Suddenly Zhao would be an amazing programmer.
Suddenly his inbox would even be more full than it is now. but he was very quick in getting a tutorial out as well to accompany, as he's been doing so often this year. So first thing
that got done was to be able to replace the custom soundtracks. Then I figured out that I could use the very same information to detect where the files and bits and pieces are on every audio file. But it took me, you know, a good night of sleep to figure that out, because I was developing the first version up to 4 a.m. in the morning, which I usually do with new tools, if anyone remembers. It took me a day, but I figured out how to open and be able to edit any audio file. So, you know, I went back and replaced songs in the 2K12 soundtrack. If you want maybe more Jay-Z in your 2K12, you can do that as well, because I see so much Jay-Z hating, I don't see where it's coming from. I'm going to put out, you know, the blueprint part 3 to replace the whole of 2K12 soundtrack. Who needs Rock Hood or these other great songs that 2K12 had? But yeah, pretty much you can open and edit any audio file of the recent NBA 2Ks, which is great. Really excited to see what people can come up with. And there are a few bugs still. For example, there is a bit of skipping, you know, maybe twice in the whole song. But Nessa24 is looking into that. He promised to look into that, and he thinks he's figured it out. So the moment that he tells me what needs to be hex edited in order to fix that, I'll get it in the tool to automate it. And the other big step would be to be able to actually listen to the segments that are already in there, so you know what you're replacing. Because for soundtracks, maybe you can go ahead and replace all the tracks, or, you know, with trial and error, you can figure out what you're replacing. It's just 23, 25 songs. But if someone wants to go ahead and replace maybe, you know, all the music that is going on inside the games, which is around, you know, 300 files, or maybe, you know, substitute the thousands and thousands of lines that is the commentary, they can't do it by trial and error. You know, you can't just substitute a line of commentary and hope it shows up at some point in the game.
If you want to blank out Clark Kellogg completely, for example?
yeah, you can't do that by trial and error. So if we figure out
100 new freaking nicknames, because I'm sick of the crappy ones that they have in it.
Yeah, yeah.
You show some respect to A-Train, please.
But, you know, if Nisa or anyone else, you know, figures out how we can actually rebuild from the segments that are inside the audio files, how can we rebuild something that can be played and that we can listen to and know what we're replacing? I mean, that would be the absolute best. But right now, you know, you can go ahead, replace the soundtracks, put the songs that you love without needing to mute the music and having your own media player open, which is cool. And if you have Redditor, If you have the full editor, you can even edit the texts and change the titles in game to make your experience more immersive. I didn't care so much for that, but it is possible. So, you know.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that's a long time coming. It has been a long time coming. I remember being wanting to change the soundtracks ever since, you know. 2K9, we managed to do that on 2K9, and Jasmine has a tutorial up on how to do that in. But it is very interesting, and I'm really hoping, I'm really glad that Nisa 24 figured it out, and, you know, that I had the tool to, had the time to make that tool before I go and join 2K Sports. So, you know, here you go. That's one last gift from me for the community. And on another smaller note, I have released a compiled version of Roster Workshop, which is supposed to be the successor of Roster Merge and Repair of last year, which allows you to pretty much take any two rosters or more and combine the best out of them. So, for example, if you want to have a roster that, you know, takes the accessory updates that one roster maker has done and takes the ratings from another roster maker and that takes the, I don't know, the player stats, or the tendencies from other from another roster, you can now combine them very easily with a few clicks without having to do any copy pasting and custom matching yourself. You just, you know, get the rosters in the tool, say, I want this and this and this from this roster, this and this from this roster, and the other thing from that roster, and Roster Workshop does everything for you. And it has a few handy repair features for, you know, a lot of stuff that goes wrong when inexperienced roster editors first delve into roster making and, you know, we have game crashes or messed up box scores or stuff like that. It has a few repair features in there. So, yeah, I haven't tested it at all, though, so you're on your own. Use it at your own risk. There could be a lot of problems. I didn't have time to test it at all, so, but I did want to get a compiled version out there. So if you guys use it and find it interesting and maybe, you know, you have a certain problem, post it in the thread and I'll do my best as, you know, as much as time allows me and as much as my upcoming job allows me to keep working a bit, fix a few bugs and, you know, give you something to work off of because, of course, both the NBA 2K audio editor and Roster Workshop along with every other of my projects is open source.
And one final note on the soundtracks of games, something I don't think we touched on in any of the podcasts last week, but if you are worried about the soundtracks in NBA 2K14, it has been stated that Jay-Z is, while he remains a great friend of 2K Sports, is not heavily involved or involved at all in NBA 2K14. So if you didn't like the songs or the menu, you're probably going to like 2K14. because we presumably will be redesigned somewhat differently, but if you don't like sort of hip hop and that kind of genres of music, you're probably not going to like the soundtrack of many basketball games in general because that tends to be the soundtrack we go for.
But since the PC version won't be changing and still be, you know, a current gen port, you know, most probably the NBA 2K audio editor will be working with NBA 2K14 the day it comes out. You know, that's a great thing about being able to auto-detect pretty much everything in the audio files that, you know, I won't have to do any work. The moment NBA 2K14 comes out for the PC, you'll be able to replace the whole soundtrack before taking one listen to it.
Yeah. And since it gets announced usually about a month or so in advance, you can be planning your custom soundtrack.
Yeah. Which songs you want to replace, which songs you won't replace and stuff like that.
You'll still be disappointed by the shoes and here and there, but the music you can do something about. Well, and the shoes too, if you look at some of the tutorials as well. But does that just about wrap up our video game discussion for this week, or is there something else on the agenda that I'm overlooking?
No, I think
we're all good.
Yeah. So does that mean we get to move on and say wonderful things about Joey Crawford now?
Yeah, we can let you vent.
I'm gonna go after you guys because I may go on a leftos like rant.
That's all right.
But let's just introduce it. Since our podcast last week, two finals games have been played. Game five, the pivotal game in San Antonio, went to the Spurs, and which placed them one win away from a championship, which they had an opportunity to close out in game six in Miami yesterday, from when you'll be listening to this, at least. And they didn't do it. We did get, however, a very close and competitive game, probably the best game since game one, unless you happen to like blowouts, which I guess if you're a diehard of either team, you would have enjoyed a game here or there. But it was definitely an interesting and exciting affair with many clutch shots down the stretch and an overtime period. Normally, you couldn't go wrong with that, but there were a couple of issues here and there. But I will actually, before I go on, I will turn it over to the resident Heat fan, Ben. Did you watch the game? And you know, what were your impressions? If so,
you make me sound so shady, but yeah, I did watch the game, and I watched actually probably about. I think I missed a little bit in the first quarter, so I think I missed the Wade dunk on Duncan, but I saw that highlight later, so I was happy about it.
It started off with three posters in the first quarter. You can't really be too disappointed with that.
Look, there was a lot of... I'll say it straight up. There was a lot of shitty calls. And it ruined it. Like, I think one of the sort of technicalities that I sort of was pissed about was the scenario where Ray Allen hit that corner three with 5.2 left, and because the refs wanted to check it.
And which ref wanted to check it?
Was it Crawford?
It was Crawford. He was the one he was the one who ran in front of Parker on the inbound.
Ah, jeez. I was looking at a pretty low res stream of it, so, and it was a little bit skippy here and there. That's for most of the game. So, and then because of that, it sort of allowed San Antonio to have a timeout, which they didn't have any left of. So they got to sort of discuss the play, whether it'll be on defense on offense. So that was kind of it's a flaw in their review system. I don't know.
And also let Miami set up their defense as well. I mean, it stopped. Yeah, it killed the momentum for both sides, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me that was probably the worst of it, because it broke a timeout rule in a sense. So
yeah.
And
it was an obvious throw as well.
Oh yeah. You know, that any further out and you would have been shooting that from the freaking car park.
Would have been out of bounds, but it
So
yeah, when I heard the commentating team say that they're taking if he was behind the line, I was wondering what line are they talking about? Where are they wondering whether he was out of bounds when he saw that? Because he certainly wasn't inside the 3-point line.
Maybe the yellow tape, the security line around the court. I mean.
Maybe.
But I'm really hoping that Crawford does not get to referee game seven, because he'll just it won't make anyone happy no matter who wins or loses.
No.
So it'll dampen what could be a potentially great series. I mean, there's been some really good moments in it, but I suppose what happens in grades in game seven could determine if this is going to be legendary type finals type performances and that. So it'll be someone needs to put that dude in a Hannibal Lecter face mask so that way you can't put a whistle in his mouth to blow so his terrible phantom calls.
Yeah. Left us?
I have to agree. I mean, I was the funniest part about last night was seeing your rage on Twitter, to be honest. But other than that, I was very disappointed and pissed off at how the game was being officiated. And my Twitter was filled of, you know, it was clear people were taking sides all game long. So it was, I think, my Twitter timeline pretty much cleared up as far as who were the Heat fans and the Spurs fans last night. Few and far between were even trying to be impartial during last night's game. But other than that, other than the complete raging, I think bad calls went both ways. I mean, I think Spurs were stolen of some calls and then some calls that I don't appreciate. Wade and LeBron not even running back because they're wasting so much time complaining about a call that wasn't called. You know, I hated seeing that. But other than that, you know, calls went wrong both ways. And I'm not saying that because of that the game was balanced. There should be no bad calls or, you know, as few as possible. There shouldn't be, you know, a balanced game of calls that went wrong. But it was a fun game. It was an exciting game. It was a very close game. And LeBron James, who was terrible for three quarters, who could do nothing except, you know, just dish out seven assists, came up big in the fourth quarter, big part of Miami's run to be able to tie the game and get it into overtime. Ray Allen with two clutch shots, one at the end of the fourth and one during overtime. Chris Bosh with two big blocks on Tony Parker, I think on consecutive possessions. And it was a great game. But what befuddled me was Greg Popovich's decisions at various points in the game. He was keeping Splitter and Ginobili way too long in.
Yeah,
I mean, Manu showed up big in Game 5, I'll give him that, but he's been terrible this series, and it was no different tomorrow. Each time he picked up the ball...
No different tomorrow, you were looking
at the TV expecting another JaVale McGee level of turnover.
Yeah.
The ball was slipping out of his hands throughout the whole game, and Popovich wouldn't get him out.
And he was magnificent.
And maybe Splitter had... Yeah. Maybe Splitter had a few timely baskets. He got a few timely baskets to go in, but other than that, where was his defense? He wasn't doing anything to contribute to the Spurs. So a lot of bad decisions by Greg Popovich yesterday, and he was left with no timeout to get the ball down to the half court line with 5 seconds left on the clock. I get the posts about how who was it that missed the free throws? Kawhi Leonard?
Yeah.
Or was it? Yeah. I get the posts about, you know, Kawhi Leonard's one missed free throw at that position before the Ray Allen three that could have given the Spurs the championship. But you have, he's a young guy. He's playing at the elimination game of the NBA Finals. I mean, I was pretty much looking at those players, wondering how can you get a single free throw to go down much
pressure.
What
do you reckon your heart rate was, you know, in that moment?
Yeah, I wouldn't blame Kawhi Leonard for missing a free throw, really, in the elimination game of the finals.
No,
I was disappointed because I wanted the Spurs to win, but it was a great game. Terrible officiating by Joey Crawford. I have to agree that this team officiators should never be on the court together again. Joey Crawford needs to just... The league needs to do something about Joey Crawford. But it was fun to see, for example, Heat fans rage over Joey Crawford not giving them the calls they wanted after all that's happened throughout Joey Crawford's career and this series especially.
Yeah. Joey. Well, I've got to put two things up. You know, I'll throw them out there first of all. Yeah, I do want the Spurs to win. You know, I of the two teams that are left standing, they are the team that I like the most. I'd like to see Duncan get one more title before he hangs it up. And, you know, that's just the way that is. And all respect to the Heat, I mean, only a fool or a true hater would say that they're not a great team and that LeBron's not a great player. I mean, there's too much evidence to the contrary, so just throw that out there right now, and that would just be stupid. But, and also, I will say that the Spurs do not lose because of the officiating, because even though you can't blame Kawhi Leonard as such, both he and Ginobili did miss those two free throws in the final seconds that would have put it out a little bit further, put it out of reach.
Yeah. And Tim Duncan got extremely cold in the second half after having an amazing first half.
Oh, 11 of 13. He outscored the Heat's big three in the first half in 11 fewer shots. So he was amazing. It was definitely a throwback performance for him. And
for a half.
The Spurs, they went cold. They made mistakes. They turned the ball over. They could have grabbed that defensive rebound that went to Bosch that kicked out to Allen for the three.
But and Tim Duncan was on the sidelines at the time.
He was on the bench. So again, Lefto said, like you said.
And the game was unpatched, so the rebounds are broken.
Yeah, yes. Get someone on that one.
Damn ball physics. Never works when you want it to.
Get David Stern patching some of those rules. I mean, there was opportunity there for the Spurs, and they did in many ways. And Parker missed a free throw in overtime that would have when he had to take that shot at the end there and got blocked, it would have already been 101-101. So it would have been a tie game there when they desperately needed a basket to get ahead in the final seconds of overtime. So the opportunities were there. It wasn't. I don't like to buy into conspiracy theories about freeing, so I don't want to say they caused it. Having said that, it really marred, the officiating marred what was a really good competitive game that anything seemed like it could happen, especially in that wild run. And also the other reason that it should be said that the Spurs didn't win, LeBron showed up in the last few minutes, just took over. Allen was hitting shots all over the place, but he took care of business. But that last play that Ben was talking about, it was just so classic Joey Crawford. And what I mean by that is, I said it in the forum and I'll say it again here, he wants to be Earl Strom, the late great Earl Strom, who was one of the great officials of the game for many years, very colorful character, always would gesture wildly and was very respected. Actually, I think I was reading on his Wikipedia page some time back, he's actually one of the few referees where the home team has a losing record when he's calling, because he doesn't buy into the home officiating or anything. It seems to me that Joey Crawford wants to be that Earl Strom, you know, the great referee and the one that's kind of a bit flamboyant or stands out with this. And you remember when he called that blocking foul against the Lakers and ran up the court dancing earlier this season? just stuff like that. Sort of, he wants to be the show, and he's a referee. Joey Crawford, you are not the show. And you're there to make calls when they... The officials aren't there to decide the game or to influence the game. They're there when rules are broken, when there's an infraction, or when there's a judgment call need to be made. The referee makes it. You don't go looking to influence the game. And when he ran in front of the Spurs and called that essentially impromptu timeout, reviewed a three-pointer that was clearly a three behind the line, gave Miami a chance to set up, and at the same time gave San Antonio an impromptu unofficial timeout, he influenced the game. He took over. He killed the flow. There was no need for it. You look at some of the things that he's done. He's, I hesitate to say get into it in case it's slander or something, but he was once indicted for tax fraud, for declaring NBA tickets to the games, the plane tickets upgraded to first class that went first class or something along those lines. There was a big problem, and he was suspended for a while. Suspended a few years back for challenging Tim Duncan to a fight, throwing him out for laughing on the bench. All kinds of... He's just got such a terrible reputation for the integrity of the game. Joey, please, go into the league office tomorrow and slap down your resignation. And if David Stern wasn't as gutless as he was, just pandering to the referees all the time, you know... We'll lock out the entire season, and because the players have a complaint, the players union have a complaint. But if the referees union doesn't want you to be transparent about the fines and everything you give to referees, you know, we'll protect the referees, you know, just pandering to them. If Stern, who, you know, I'm so happy that he's stepping down, and I've defended Stern in the past because a lot of people get on Stern very quickly, but I'm glad he's stepping down, and if he had any kind of integrity at all, he'd do something about the officiating, and he would say to Joey Crawford, you are out. You are not refereeing this game anymore, this sport, and I can only hope that Adam Silver does a better job. I can only hope that we have, you know, people are looking forward to a Game 7, and that's great. I don't know if we're going to get a Game 7 that's going to be as exciting as Game 6 was. I fear that we're going to see a Heat blowout with the Spurs completely done, Heat just walk over the title, and, you know, is an anticlimactic end to an otherwise series that became quite exciting. And, you know, thank you, Joey Crawford, for marring the game, and shame on you and shame on the NBA. And I'm done with the rant.
On a good note, on a positive note, at least Mike Miller proved that there's no point in raging about sues when they're obviously not so important to the player's performance.
I saw I think it was the Not Bill Walton account tweeted, is it the shoe?
Yeah, and we had the whole saga going through the fourth quarter about the headband. And people were saying that LeBron was better without the headband, and then LeBron slumped for a bit, so LeBron needed to find his headband back immediately and stuff like that.
Well, I think that's actually where Joey Crawford comes in, because, you know, the headband gets knocked off and he saw LeBron's receding hairline, he touched his own bald head and thought, you know what, me too, brother. I'm giving you this one.
But, we balding must stick together.
Yeah, stick together, the hair clubbed men. But but no, as I said before, no, he didn't hand them the game, but yeah, shame on them. But yeah, the headband, it was very interesting, and anyone following... Definitely follow the Not Bill Walton account and some of the other satirical accounts on Twitter, because you do get to see some pretty funny remarks during the game on the, and the headband stuff was getting a lot of attention.
Yeah.
Almost
at least I have, you know, another video out of the series of players with one shoe making a great play right after they lose the shoe. You know, I'll have another video to use as evidence when people start raging on me because we haven't gotten the shoes right.
Shoes are clearly not important, or at least having both shoes. But like I said to you, you know, if in 2K14 we can't you know, we can't lose a shoe and continue.
Yeah, it should be a gameplay mechanic. I know. And maybe make it a player choice in the My Player Closet. You know, how many shoes do you want to wear today? Will you just wear your right shoe or your left shoe? But then, you know, get split stats on NBA Stats Tracker depending on how many shoes and which shoe the player wore. So he's played 15 minutes without his left shoe, and he got three three-pointers to go down for a 10. So, you know, maybe play without the left shoe for the rest of the season. You know, we're going to get in really big detail.
Well, do a Gerald Green and enter the go in the dunk contest and attempt to dunk without pair of shoes on.
But I like the comment for my career: wear a headband -5 to all attributes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the headband, Pasta Padre made a comment saying the headband should put a -5 on all your attributes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was Pasta's comment, that's right. And someone was talking about the headband should be up at the podium after the game. And
if the Heat get the championship, it should be up on their rafters.
Yeah, the finals MVP.
Yeah, LeBron's headband.
Well, I mean, since that's come up, I've thrown in my prediction for Game 7. I've got a sinking feeling that it's going to be a Heat blowout. How do you guys see it? And Ben, you've actually picked it. You said this was going to 7 games.
Yeah. Yeah.
Someone on this panel got a prediction right. I mean, it remains to be seen, you know, whether your prediction of the Heat is actually going to come true or not, but you actually at least got that, which, for this panel... You know,
I'm halfway there.
Yeah. I mean, that's a championship in itself.
Yes. Does that mean I get a 10-plus rating improvement in my prediction stats?
Are you wearing a headband?
I can.
Well, we're going to have to account for the headband, of course. So.
I'll throw on any accessory I need to help boost that improvement. I got calf sleeves, I got compression shorts, I got the compression tops, I got the shooting sleeves, I got my headbands, I got it all.
Have you tried playing naked and with no shoes? Maybe you'll get 20 blocks that way.
No one's going to come near you.
It was
below the basket, best post defense ever. Nobody goes near the naked man.
Just hoisting up from 40 feet. And just.
Yeah. His nickname was too literal. Everybody called him man. Few people knew he was actually playing naked.
Yeah. No, it was scary enough watching a club basketball game where a guy was just wearing the Skins compression shorts and jersey. It was like... Yeah, who drew the short straw on trying to play against him on either offense or defense? You just wouldn't want to back down in the key on against him in that way. And it was like, wrong. And surely,
you know,
a health code violation too. You know, so
yeah. You say that though, and remember when we were discussing quite a few weeks back? I think it was around episode 25. The possibility of some very talented WNBA players entering the NBA, and I keep seeing this excuse for women not to join the NBA as if that goes something like if a woman backs down on me on the post, I might get a little excited.
Yeah, that's the internet for you.
They're basketball players. They're focused on basketball. They're not going to be focusing on a woman that, let's be honest, I mean, these women are pretty 2 feet to be considered regular. I don't know. Anyway, to each their own, maybe some players like their women so fit. But, I mean, you know,
there's no such thing as mixed sports.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, that even if a woman backs down on you in the post while you're focusing on playing basketball, that is going to affect you in any way.
Yeah.
I really don't see that. I mean, I definitely see that coming from people that have never played against women on a...
women, or met a woman, or, you know, had any...
Yeah. On any serious level.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like saying that model photographers can't help but, you know, get an erection every time or fuck their models every time.
God.
Every time they do a photo shoot.
Yeah. You know? There's no professionalism at all. Yeah.
They're not camera shy.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous to me. I hate that kind of statement. I'm not saying that just for that, you know, Ben, you should go out and play naked and back down on other people naked. I just want to make that point.
Well, okay. if the Heat are allowed to play a dinosaur at center, then the rule book has already been thrown out the window. We might as well let Air Bud become a reality. So
it's like when Homer tries to get Duncan into the NFL.
Yeah. but since we have broached it, as I say, predictions.
The jokes about Boris Diaw's weight. Boris Diaw's weight. Did you notice any of them on Twitter last night? The jokes about Boris Diaw's weight.
Yeah.
Saying, what's a quarter pounder burger called in France? The answer is not enough food if it's for Boris Diaw.
I wonder, because he was criticized by somebody for having a go at Doris Burke throughout the finals. And it actually isn't, and it's funny because I've played a lot of 2K, obviously, so I should be aware of Doris Burke's abilities, but I'm pretty sure she actually sounds more excited in 2K than she does during the average ESPN.
Yeah.
And I never really noticed it, but she really never does seem to be excited about anything or give any emotion on the sideline.
She tries to be serious and professional and, you know, journalism-like, because you only see her do player interviews. You never see her come on the audio commentary just to, you know, discuss some facts or whatever, which is what she does on NBA 2K. I don't know if it's an excitement.
She does in some games during the season. She does do commentary. commentary.
It's, yeah. It's okay. Probably games like Bobcats versus Wizards or Magic.
Yeah.
So probably the ones where they're not going to get those ratings. They just end up having to fulfill some duty of having to
put them on TV.
Yeah, you know, every team should at least get one airtime game nationally. So yeah.
But someone tweeted and said that he was being sexist for that. I mean, you know, everyone here, the account tweeted back, if I was not saying anything about her because she's a woman, it'd be sexist. She's having a go at everyone, and that's true. Yeah. I mean, everyone's right for parity, basically.
It reminds me of Obama having to apologize because he made a compliment about a lawyer's looks.
That's right. I remember we did that a few weeks back. Yeah, it's sometimes when the political correctness does go a bit too far. Yeah. But yeah,
it's not like I'm trying to support Obama, because with everything that's coming out about the NSA and PRISM, I definitely do not support Obama at all right now. But, you know, the fact is, you know, it was ridiculous for people to be asking for him to apologize for making a compliment about a woman.
Agreed.
But sorry, Ben, we've interrupted you a couple of times. Your predictions for Game 7? Blowout, close one, Joey Crawford descends from the roof from a hot air balloon.
Or he arises from hell to cause more hell. The center court logo turns into like a flaming pentagram where he just appears from, I don't know, if he makes the
jump to WWE, I mean,
comes out with a chair to smack across the back of Tim Duncan or something, who knows. If he's reffing the game,
I don't think he will. I think he will alternate the crew.
He's probably Stern's happy he's done his duties in forcing a Game 7, so
I want to see
he sends him back to the crypt.
I want to see Popovich just get a record fine for that, because he was pretty irate when Ginobili didn't get that foul call at the end of overtime.
Yep.
So I want to know if that money ends up in, if he does get fined, if that money ends up in Crawford's pocket. But sorry, go on.
I can see him throwing a Gatorade bottle at Joey Crawford.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. And that could be a new achievement in 2K14. That one would be a good one to go for. I think people would platinum up in their game to get that achievement.
Yeah, NBA's really going to go for that one.
Yep. I'll still say Heat in 7, but I hope it is a close one and not the blowout that like was with the
pretty much every other game.
yeah. And just where it's competitive till the end, that would be great. You know, it'd be the better way to end a very interesting season.
Yeah, and after this game that was so exciting, it would be a letdown to have anything less than a close one.
Yeah, but if the refs ruin it, I'll probably turn off and won't give a shit who wins at the end. I've known with Swan a couple of times already, so yeah, I'll say that. So
go,
yeah,
go Bobcats.
Yeah, I'll go back to watching the NBL. Well, that felt dirty saying that.
Well, we've got video games to that we can create our own reality for.
Yeah, so. I'll go back to playing The Last of Us. Which I'm nearly finished, and it's like, I don't want the journey to end.
I will say this about The Last of Us. It's a pretty lousy basketball simulation.
I don't know. It's got the Dwight Howard mode in being able to throw up bricks.
Oh, I like it.
Damn. Thank you for that one.
That's just the alley-oop. I tossed you that alley-oop like Wade to LeBron.
Oh, yeah, and I slammed it home.
Left us any thoughts on? Oh, sorry, Ben. Was that anything? Any other thoughts on the Game 7?
No, I think I've said my.
Said your piece. Yep.
Yep.
Left us. You hate Joey Crawford, don't you?
Yeah. I do. I absolutely do. It will be interesting, though. It will be interesting to see how Game 7 develops and if it can be nearly as exciting as Game 6 was. However, Danny Green will need to somehow find a way to get his shot back, because Chris Bosh did make a statement saying he wouldn't be open in Game 6, and Danny Green was nowhere near as efficient as he was any of the previous games. Popovich will need to have a better game plan and keep his head in the game and not leave Ginobili in or Splitter in if they're not contributing at all. And Tim Duncan will need to find a way to be consistent for more than a half. Other than that, the Heat will be doing their thing. They'll be doing what they've been doing for, you know, this whole season and this playoff series. And we've seen that even if LeBron fails for three quarters, he can somehow find a way to get a triple-double before the final buzzer sounds. So it's all. I don't think. It's a question of how the Heat will perform. I think it's a question of how the Spurs will perform. It's all down to the Spurs. That's all I'm going to say. It's all down to the Spurs and Popovich.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't come down to the referees and we do get a competitive game, then, well, I guess we've got to live with the result. There's not really much, not much we can do about it. I mean, I try yelling at the TV, but it only works occasionally.
If you had a Kinect, it would work more regularly.
Microsoft should just be bringing that out as well. You know, and that might sell me on the Xbox One. I actually did yell out at Bosch when he missed that free throw in overtime. So, you know, it works sometimes, but my jinx powers, they fluctuate. So
don't worry, I was kind of hinting, yelling out that the Heat will trade him during the off season. And then he gets those three or four crucial plays in the last 6-7 minutes of the game. And I was like, you're redeemed for the moment. You're
saved
for the moment, yeah.
Save from extinction. Watch the Taurus.
But I made an interesting post about, you know, with his whole dinosaur likeness. He attacked like a velociraptor on his prey on that final shot.
Yeah, although the Velociraptor is only like the size of a chicken and feathered.
Although, Ben, I saw you make a comment near the end of the fourth quarter about, I think, Cole and Bosch. You believe they're going to be out in this offseason? Do you still stand by Bosch leaving during the offseason after the way he saved pretty much, you know, the Heat twice late in overtime?
It's kind of what I just alluded to. I think Miami will want to try and get someone who is more closer to the basket as opposed to trying to be a 16 to 24 foot jump shooter for a center. I think Bosch can hit the occasional shot. But when he's thinking he's like a Stephen Curry or a Tony Parker or something like that, that's when you know you're in a lot of trouble. So I think in the long run, I think they're going to try and find someone that would be able to help be that low post offensive presence and even defensive presence in being able to get more rebounds consistently, because Bosch's rebounding numbers were a little bit sad this year. So yeah, but it's going to be a matter of who can they get for him that will be the benefit of both teams in a sense, you know. Who's going to want to take on Bosch and his contract at this stage? So if they can't get rid of him for hopefully a more dominant sort of power forward center, then sadly they will have to stick with him.
Dwight Howard.
Thank you.
No, and fuck no. Sorry, I had to say it.
That's fine. On this network, you can.
That's right, we're not bound by the FCC.
Yeah. Well, Tony Parker's another player who's going to have to play a little better. He was, what, 6 of 24 or something like that?
He did get some amazing circle shots to go
he
down
did.
Again.
That three.
He does it every game.
Yeah.
The weirdest of shots that you say, oh, he's throwing it up out of desperation. And it he gets them down.
I was going to... Someone needs to throw it out there and paint that when he got that incredible shot in game one off the board, banked it in, should have been dubbed the French kiss. But I'm disappointed that, you know, with all the terrible titles and headlines that the media comes up with, you know, Larry Bird comes back to Indiana Pacers and Bird comes home to nest, you know, Bird flies coop when he retires. I'm disappointed that nobody came up with that or threw it out there.
Yeah. I saw one today, or actually just a few minutes ago, Mario just sent it to me. EA's Danny Moore called Manu Ginobili Manu turnover Ibili. So yeah.
Oh, that's forced.
Yeah, well, we're trying to say it out loud. Yeah,
but maybe it looks a bit better on the page.
Yeah, it looks better written and said. Put it that way.
We couldn't have just settled for Manu terribly, or you know, something like that.
Oh, yeah, true.
Oh well. I mean, like we said, hopefully we will get that that competitive game in Game 7 to really do the series justice. Because even with the blowouts, there have been some entertaining moments and good runs. We've seen some good stretches of basketball by each team. A couple of really good games, Game 1 and Game 6. So at least give us a good Game 7 that and may the best team win. May the team that shows up and perhaps makes the fewest mistakes. You know, a situation like this may just come down to that, as it often does, and let it not come down to Joey Crawford or Dan Crawford or Jamal Crawford or any of the Crawfords that might poke their nose in. Jordan Crawford.
Cindy Crawford?
Cindy Crawford. Jordan Crawford claiming that he's better than Michael Jordan. What is it with these Crawfords? Yeah.
It's the family name.
Apparently so. I'm just very Andy Crawford right now. So I apologize to everyone out there with the name Crawford. You're cool, as long as, you know, I'm sure.
Okay. Anything else to come up during the past week? Not past week, I mean the past few days since we've been on the air.
I think that's pretty much it.
I got a couple little fun facts.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay, saw today, you've all seen Far Cry 3 and how it's got some animals and like wildlife and all that stuff in the game.
Fish AI?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this might be a little bit different. Cassowary AI. Apparently, there's been over 3.3 million deaths from cassowaries in the game. In Far Cry 3 at the moment. That was one statistical stat that the developers had come out with today.
Is that from the Far Cry stats tracker that...
not too sure, but I thought that was absolutely hilarious that there's been that many deaths from such...
cassowary.
Yeah, an oversized chicken.
A bird with an inherently funny name. I mean, it could only be better if it was a duck, really. Killed by ducks.
And a couple other fun facts. Apparently, The Last of Us made more money over the weekend than Man of Steel.
Hmm. I saw you post that. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And it's been getting some pretty decent reviews, Man of Steel.
Oh, yeah. Although I had a couple of mixed ones, but generally it seems to be up there. So
better than some of the other Superman flicks that have come along.
Yeah, especially considering the other Superman flicks. Yeah.
Yep.
So are you still enjoying? Would you say you're still enjoying The Last of Us as much as you did Friday when you were starting the game, starting the console up before we were even done with the podcast?
Oh yeah. You know, he hit some real interesting moments. There was one.
No. Okay, there's no need.
I'm not going to spoil it, but I was just going to say there's a moment where you just sort of need to take in something, and it's sort of a nice separation moment from all the crazy stuff that you've just gone through, when you sort of take the moment in and just
enjoy it. And stuff like that seem to be missing from games. I mean, yeah, especially if you consider, first person shooters. You know, hardly ever do they take the time to give you a moment to, you know, maybe go through a quiet, slower part of your story. And, you know, blockbusters seem to be all about the action and not so much about the story. So it's nice to have games that, you know, somehow break the pace. And, for example, you know, Bioshock Infinity was one of those games that had a great story to go along with the first-person shooter mechanics. And all the Bioshock games were like that. I mean, even Bioshock 1 and 2 before Infinity. And that's why I like games that not only have a story, but that know how to make good use of it, you know, to break the pace, to allow you to take it in. Because there's some games where there is a story. For example, I find myself enjoying the Call of Duty games very much because of all the action, especially, you know, on single player. I never go on multiplayer on these kinds of games. But if you ask me to tell you what happened throughout the story, I have no idea. There's so much action going in at all moments that I have no time to actually take in what is going on from a storyline standpoint.
You know, everyone is talking about a Michael Bay film where it's just so much action you lose the essence. You end up losing the essence of the story, and it's like, well, that kind of
And I'm pissed off because I know there is a story in there. I just have no time to process it, you know, with all the shooting and focusing that I need to do down the scope. So I'm really glad that, you know, there are games out there that make sure to break the pace and let you take in the story. And that's one of the main reasons I liked Mass Effect so much, because I did enjoy the combat, and I also had enough of time outside of combat to enjoy the story, and, you know, and it had a really interesting story at that. So, I'm really, really excited to, you know, somehow at some point play The Last of Us. I don't know if it's going to be ported to the PlayStation 4. I would imagine that, you know, for people that that Sony needs and the developers that Sony has deals with, they have to be aware of people moving from the Xbox 360 to the PlayStation 4 as the next gen transition happens, and that would never buy a PlayStation 3. So what I'm wondering is, does that justify some PlayStation 3 games to come over to the PlayStation 4 just for the people that transitioned over that were, you know, Xbox diehard fans that only had the Xbox 360 and missed out on all the PlayStation 3 games with maybe, you know, some enhancements to the engine and stuff like that? Because I don't know if, you know, if first-person shooters are the games you want to try through streaming services like Gaikai, considering, you know, you have to be, the latency needs to be at its minimum.
I'm not sure, but I tell you what, it is a good game to play. Like I mentioned, I think, when we did our last podcast during the E3 thing, how it does challenge you in trying to achieve strategies, but man, I'm probably in the 80 to 90% bracket of finishing it, maybe even close to the 95. I'm not 100% sure yet. I haven't seen a thing where it actually indicates the amount of progress like in Tomb Raider where you're at. But I'll tell you what, I don't want the journey to end. Mm-hmm. I want to kind of know what happens, but you kind of don't, because you just want...
It doesn't have after the end gameplay or open ended gameplay at all. Like you can just wander around after, or
you can go back and do a lot of free roaming and find a lot of things that you didn't. But I haven't talked to too many people about the game yet to sort of find out what happens after, because I haven't wanted to ruin it for myself yet.
Yeah. No.
But you do get heavily invested in these characters and the decisions that they have to make in it, and I'm like, I'm honestly blown away by it so far, and like there's just some scenes that I encountered the last 24 to 48 hours are like holy shit kind of things, and And yeah, trust me, I really want someone that I know to play it. I know a couple of mates are playing it now, but I know that I'm well ahead of it, and I really want to talk to them about it, and just sort of gauge how they felt about it and stuff like that, and just sort of because it, I don't know, it hits you so much, this game, and I'm like, I've not experienced that. Like, I really enjoyed Uncharted series. You know, that was sort of, you know, started getting me seeing where these games could go, and then from what this has done, it's taken it to a whole new level, and it's mind-blowing, to be honest. And, you know, I've seen some of the other developers, like Cliffy B and even David Jaffe and all that stuff, they made some really positive comments about it. And, you know, like David Jaffe stated, you know, he was more excited to play The Last of Us than go see Man of Steel and all that stuff. So, but the bar is raised in the terms of storytelling and games and where it can emotionally hit you and take you in that. So please, someone play it. I want to talk to someone about it and when they finish it, because it's unbelievable. I'll just leave it at that. But yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to use this as like some, you know, ploy to try and oversell the game. Trust me, it's that freaking good. Like, you know, the whole game trailers, how they had their GDEX thing during the whole E3.
Mm-hmm.
It's the sort of reference for social media of who's talking about what, whether console or game. It's still leading at 95 or 96 in the category sort of department for games at the moment.
Yeah.
When they're still tracking it. And so it's still getting like over 43 nearly or so more 1,000 mentions a day or something like that. So there's something about this game. I'll put it that. And yeah, someone's got to talk to me about it as soon as possible, because I'm itching and dying to talk to someone about it. But okay. I don't want to ruin it for them, and because I know that they're so far behind with the people that I know. So it's like, yeah.
Well, it is out there, so maybe, you know, someone from the forums that has played the game will contact you now. But yeah, you know,
we got spoiler tags in the forum, so yeah. Anyone who wants to, and I think we do have a thread in there, don't we? The Last of Us.
I've posted in it.
So get in there with the spoiler tags, and don't spoil it for anyone else. But yeah, just certainly gush among yourself, because it does. It seems to be getting a lot of great press. A lot of people are very impressed. So
on a final point, I'm still curious about all these blockbusters that are coming just before the next generation consoles are coming out, and I'm left wondering, you know, are there no plans to bring them to the next generation, or can they just not discuss them yet because it's going to take, you know, quite a bit of time, and they don't want to get anyone excited before they have anything solid? Because I would have to imagine that at least Grand Theft Auto 5, you know, would be
so close to the end of the generation,
a prime candidate for the next generation consoles, especially considering how much the current generation consoles have struggled with Grand Theft Auto 4's engine and how bad the frame rate was, dropping below 30 frames per second on both consoles in various instances.
To say nothing of the PC.
to say nothing of the PC, but however, PCs have outgrown these consoles, and you know, you see GTA 4 with these Ice Hunter mods that make the game something out of, you know, next generation games.
Yeah.
They make it even heavier and more beautiful, and I've heard of graphics cards overheating by the use of that mod. But it is a game that has a heavy engine that the PCs can finally, you know, the past year play decently, and most PCs at least, you know, play decently and can look much prettier. So I would have to wonder why would they want, you know, their latest and greatest iteration be a current gen exclusive and struggle the same way, and even worse if they had any advancement in their, you know, graphics and animations, which I would have to imagine they did, especially, you know, considering the amount of features. The sheer amount of features GTA 5 is touted to have, which is pretty much everything we've ever wanted from Grand Theft Auto, ever. You know, if you've read any of those huge feature lists if they're anything close to being true. So I would have to wonder, you know, are they not planning to bring it at all, or are they just staying silent for now until they have something solid, like at least an approximate release date? Because I would have to imagine that such a huge game would be a huge undertaking to be brought to the next generation consoles. But, you know, then there's games like Gran Turismo 5, you know, which is also a big game. So I'm wondering, has it been replaced by Drive Club in the next generation? Will we have to wait for Gran Turismo 6
to be a Gran Turismo game on PlayStation 4? That's coming out on the PS3. Because Gran Turismo 5 was... You're thinking of Forza 5.
Oh, okay. So we've already had Gran Turismo 5 and 6 is coming out now? Okay.
Yep.
You can see how I was... I didn't have a PlayStation 3 or didn't follow that ecosystem at all. But yeah, you get my point. You know, the latest Gran Turismo, it's coming out pretty close to the release of PlayStation 4. So you have to wonder, you know, is it coming out on the PlayStation 4, or has Drive Club replaced Gran Turismo as a franchise, or at least temporarily, until, you know, the developers of Gran Turismo build a game from the ground up for next gen? So yeah, it's going to be interesting, because there's a lot of titles on the PS3 that I'd love to play on the PS4. I'm not willing to get a PS3 for them. I'd love to play on the PS4, and I'd love to play them on full high definition and zero latency compared to, you know, whatever my internet can provide with Gaikai services.
Well, I must admit, while playing the game, The Last of Us, it doesn't look 720p. It looks freaking, like, it's just so freaking beautifully done, and probably the best, actually the best console game that I've visually seen. I think one way they could possibly look at porting it, because Naughty Dog is still a small team. They've only got two development teams at the moment, and obviously their second team is currently working on their first PS4 title. But they have had partner relations with Mass Media Inc., who ported the versions of Jax and Daxter onto PS3, and I think they may be the ones that done it for the PS Vita. So there's a possibility they could hand it out to them to port it up to the PS4. Who knows? But find whatever way you can to get the game, because I so recommend it. I've not been on this kind of journey before in a game, so yes, I want people to see it and experience it. And like I said, I really want to talk. And because you got a lot of development experience in a lot of ways, it'd be cool to talk to someone who they can give their technical thoughts on it in a lot of ways. So yeah,
if I do get around to playing it, I'll make sure to reach you. In any case, I think we've pretty much wrapped up our discussion for this week, right, guys?
No, I'd say so.
Yep.
So I guess it comes time to plug all our various things, doesn't it? Very well then. So that's episode 33 of the NLSC podcast. If you like what you heard, you can find us every week on NBA-live.com, of course, but you can also subscribe to us on iTunes and get it delivered fresh to your iTunes and device of listening. Yeah, it's getting late at night. I'm not even talking properly now.
Serve fresh weekly,
yes. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter @the NLSC. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/the NLSC. Keep visiting the NLSC, NBA-live.com for everything we do. Take it to the forums. Let us know what you think about this podcast and everything we talk about, and all the other great topics that we're talking about in the forum and mod releases and so on and so forth. So, once again, that's going to do it for episode number 33 of the NLSC podcast. I'm Andrew.
I'm Leftos.
I'm Arcane.
And we're out like Joey Crawford's Scribility.
Bye-bye.
right?